Her hands were tied behind her, and her ankles were roped together with a kind of cord you see on Venetian blinds. Sheriff said, "Is this Nancy Clutter?" He'd never seen the child before. And I said, "Yes. Yes, that's Nancy." We stepped back into the hall and looked around. All the other doors were closed. We opened one, and that turned out to be a bathroom. Something about it seemed wrong. I decided it was because of the chair, a sort of dining room chair that looked out of place in a bathroom. The next door, we all agreed it must be Kenyon's room. A lot of boy stuff scattered around. And I recognized Kenyon's glasses. Saw them on a bookshelf beside the bed. But the bed was empty, though it looked as if it had been slept in. So we walked to the end of the hall, the last door, and there on her bed. That's where we found Mrs. Clutter. She'd been tied too, but differently, with her hands in front of her so that she looked as though she were praying. And in one hand she was holding, gripping, a handkerchief. Or was it Kleenex? The cord around her wrists ran down to her ankles, which were bound together, and then ran on down to the bottom of the bed where it was tied to the footboard. A very complicated, artful piece of work. Think how long it took to do. And her lying there, scared out of her wits. Well, she was wearing some jewelry. Two rings. Which is one of the reasons why I've always discounted robbery as a motive. And a robe, and a white nightgown, and white socks. Her mouth had been taped with adhesive, but she'd been shot point blank in the side of the head. And the blast, the impact, had ripped the tape loose. Her eyes were open, wide open, as though she were still looking at the killer. Because she must have had to watch him do it, aim the gun. Nobody said anything. We were too stunned. I remember the sheriff searched around to see if he could find the discharged cartridge. But whoever had done it was much too smart and cool to have left behind any clues like that. Naturally, we were wondering where was Mr. Clutter. And Kenyon. Sheriff said, "Let's try downstairs." The first place we tried was the master bedroom, the room where Mr. Clutter slept. The bed covers were drawn back, and lying there, toward the foot of the bed, was a billfold with a mess of cards spilling out of it, like somebody had shuffled through them hunting something particular. A note, an IOU, who knows? The fact that there wasn't any money in it didn't signify one way or the other. It was Mr. Clutter's billfold, and he never did carry cash. Even I knew that, and I'd only been in Holcomb a little more than 2 months. Another thing I knew was that neither Mr. Clutter nor Kenyon could see a darn without his glasses. And there were Mr. Clutter's glasses sitting on a bureau. So I figured wherever they weren't there of their own accord. We looked all over, and everything was just as it should be. No sign of a struggle, nothing disturbed. Except the office, where the telephone was off the hook and the wires cut, same as in the kitchen. Sheriff Robinson, he found some shotguns in a closet and sniffed them to see if they had been fired recently. Said they hadn't, and I never saw a more bewildered man. Said, "Where the devil can Herb be?" About then we heard footsteps coming up the stairs from the basement. "Who's that?" said the sheriff, like he was ready to shoot. And a voice said, "It's me, Wendell." Turned out to be Wendell Meyer, the undersheriff. Seems he had come to the house and hadn't seen us, so he'd gone investigating down in the basement. The sheriff told him, and it was sort of pitiful, "Wendell, I don't know what to make of it. There's two bodies upstairs." "Well," he said, Wendell did, "there's another one down here." So we followed him down to the basement, or playroom, I guess you'd call it. It wasn't dark. There were windows that let in plenty of light. Kenyon was over in a corner, lying on a couch,